That was what the land meant to me. A beloved face I longed to see again. And as the years progressed, I laid the foundations for my return. I worked and studied. A full scholarship brought me to Stanford, and to the attention of a professor who recommended me for a summer job at an excavation in Egypt's western desert. In June, at the end of my junior year, I boarded a flight to Cairo. Even now, in the darkness of my California bedroom, I remember how my eyes ached from the sunlight glaring on white-hot sand. I feel the sting of the wind peppering my face with desert grit. These memories make me happy. With a trowel in my hand and the sun on my shoulders, this was the culmination of a young girl's dreams. How quickly dreams become nightmares. I'd boarded the plane to Cairo as a happy college student. 3 months later, I returned home a changed woman. I did not come back from the desert alone. A monster followed me. In the dark, my eyelids spring open. Was that a footfall? A door creaking open? I lie on damp sheets, heart battering itself against my chest. I am afraid to get out of bed, and afraid not to. Something is not right in this house. After years of hiding, I know better than to ignore the warning whispers in my head. Those urgent whispers are the only reason I am still alive. I pull open the nightstand drawer and take out the gun. It is not legally registered, and it makes me nervous, keeping a firearm under the same roof with my 14-year-old daughter. But I know how to use it. My bare feet are silent as I step out of my room and move down the hall, past my daughter's closed door. I conduct the same inspection that I have made 1,000 times before, always in the dark. In the kitchen, I check the windows and the door. In the living room, I do the same. Everything is secure. I come back up the hall and pause outside my daughter's bedroom. The door gives a loud squeak as I open it, but it won't wake her. As with most teenagers, her sleep is akin to a coma. The first thing I notice is the breeze, and I give a sigh. Once again, Tari has ignored my wishes and left her window wide open, as she has so many times before. I step inside and pause beside the bed, watching her sleep, listening to the steady rhythm of her breathing. I remember the first time I laid eyes on her, red-faced and crying in the obstetrician's hands. That was the moment I knew what her name would be. I thought of the words carved in the great temple at Abu Simbel, words chosen by Ramses the Great to proclaim his love for his wife. Nefertari, for whom the sun doth shine. My daughter is the one and only treasure that I brought back with me from Egypt, and I am terrified of losing her. Tari is so much like me. It's as if I'm watching myself sleeping. When she was 10 years old, she could already read hieroglyphs. At 12, she could recite all the dynasties down to the Ptolemies. She is a clone of me in every way, untainted by the evil that fathered her. But she is also a normal 14-year-old girl, and this has been a source of frustration these past weeks as I've felt darkness closing in around us. My daughter is oblivious to the danger because I have hidden the truth from her. She likes San Diego, and she looks forward to her first year in high school. Were it not for her resistance, we would have left town weeks ago. A breeze blows in the window, chilling the sweat on my skin. I set the gun down on the nightstand and cross to the window to close it. For a moment I linger, breathing in cool air. Outside, the night has fallen silent, except for a mosquito's whine. A prick stings my cheek. The significance of that mosquito bite does not strike me until I reach up to slide the window shut. I feel the icy breath of panic rush up my spine. There is no screen over the window. Where is the screen? Only then do I sense the malevolent presence. While I stood watching my daughter, it was watching me. It has always been watching.